sad day to, you know, to know your legislator was involved in something like this.
Bethel Democrat Representative Zach Fansler resigns. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Friday, February 2nd. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, industry reps and Native corporations strike an optimistic chord on the Donlin Mine.
Development and the traditional subsistence Alaska Native lifestyle does not have to be mutually exclusive. They can exist in harmony.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
The Alaska Commission on Post-Secondary Education offers the Alaska Supplemental Education Loan for students attending most college or training programs in or outside of Alaska, and it offers interest rates lower than the Federal Plus. For more information, call 800-441-2962 or visit acpe.alaska.gov/radio. This message sponsored by the Alaska Commission on Post-Secondary Education, Alaska's higher education state agency.
A week after his own coalition demanded his resignation, Representative Zach Fansler resigned this morning. The freshman Democrat from Bethel is accused of assaulting a woman when she rejected his sexual advances, though he denies the allegations. KYUK's Teresa Katsourilis reports.
In the resignation letter he submitted to House Speaker Bryce Edgman this morning, Fansler wrote that he planned, quote, to dedicate more time to personal matters. It has been an honor to work beside my colleagues in the Alaska House of Representatives and serve the residents of the 38th District and this great state, Fansler said. He did not respond to KYUK's request for comment, though his attorney did. Fansler's resignation letter will take effect February 12th, and Governor Walker will have another 30 days to come up with his replacement. Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta Democrats are already considering who could take Fansler's place and will be caucusing to select a new chair for the district on Tuesday. In an interview with KYUK, House Speaker Bryce Edgman said that Fansler's resignation will bring closure to his colleagues, his constituents, and the woman who accused him.
To his constituents out in House District 38, our message to you from the coalition, you know, your staff are working hard on your behalf. It's a sad day to know your legislator was involved in something like this. And in the meantime, things continue on.
State legislators started demanding that Fansler resign last weekend. The same day, the Juneau Empire published a searing account of the assault allegations against him. A woman accused Fansler of slapping her multiple times when she tried to leave his hotel room, rupturing one of her eardrums in the process. Fansler did not mention the assault allegations in his resignation letter or apologize to the woman who made them.
Why would you apologize for something you didn't do?
Fansler's attorney, Wally Tetlow, has repeatedly denied the assault allegations on his client's behalf. The Juneau Empire used an extensive text exchange between Fansler and the woman to help corroborate her account of the assault, but the Empire has not published their full conversation. Tetlow suggested that several apparently damning text messages were taken out of context or were in reference to something else.
He decided to resign, well, because the false allegations against him basically create an atmosphere in which he felt that he could not do his job.
Fansler's coalition did appear to believe the allegations against him. Speaker Edgman demanded that Fansler resign within hours of the Empire's report and spoke with Fansler privately three different times this week. House leadership also stripped Fansler of his staff last weekend and assigned them to the House Rules Committee. But Edgman confirms they are back at their desks in the House District 38 office. The staff released a statement of their own this afternoon. These are very serious allegations that warrant careful consideration, and Mr. Fansler and the victim deserve to have the matter handled within the justice system, they wrote. We will continue to do our best to keep constituents informed and have their legislative and agency issues addressed. This is the second time that Edgman has called for a member of his own party to resign. In December, he demanded that Representative Dean Westlake step down after sexual harassment allegations were made against him. They were later substantiated. Edgman said he'd worked closely with Fansler during his term.
I thought he did a great job. I thought he was personable. I thought he was a great team member. You know, I thought that he had a great future in front of him.
Were you surprised by these allegations?
I was very surprised.
Edgman added that the subcommittee of the Legislative Council is revising and strengthening the State House's sexual harassment policies. He says the subcommittee has met several times this week. In Bethel, I'm Teresa Katsourilis.
Two coalitions of environmental groups filed separate lawsuits today challenging the federal government's December lease sale in the National Petroleum Reserve, Alaska. The government offered 10 million acres at that sale, all the land within NPRA that was designated eligible for development. Interior Secretary Ryan Zinke says he was fulfilling a pledge he made to refill the Trans-Alaska pipeline. But the sale drew only 7 bids, covering less than 1% of the area offered. One lawsuit takes a traditional approach. It alleges the Bureau of Land Management was required to conduct a new environmental study before the sale. Attorneys at Trustees for Alaska filed the complaint on behalf of the Northern Alaska Environmental Center, the Wilderness Society, and 3 other groups. The BLM said last fall it was relying on environmental studies conducted for the same territory during the Obama administration. Earth Justice attorneys in their suit say the BLM should have considered the climate effects of potential oil and gas production that could result from such a huge sale. The plaintiffs in that case include the National Resources Defense Council and Greenpeace. The NPRA is an area the size of Indiana to the west of Prudhoe Bay. The tone of a hearing in Anchorage on 2 draft permits for the proposed Donlin gold mine was very different from those held in the region where the mine would be located. KYUK's Anna Rose MacArthur reports that in Anchorage last week, those who gave public comments to state regulators expressed trust and support for the proposed mine.
The Anchorage comments came from industry groups and Native corporations. 5 people testified. Each spoke in enthusiastic support of the mine's plans and the Donlin project overall. That reaction differs sharply from the comments delivered weeks before by rural Kuskokwim residents at similar hearings in Bethel and Aniak. There, the majority of residents living downriver of the proposed mine said they didn't want it. To them, the project's potential economic benefits weren't worth its risk to a river, land, and culture built on subsistence. But in Anchorage, the industry groups and Native corporations saw it differently.
Development and the traditional subsistence Alaska Native lifestyle does not have to be mutually exclusive. They can exist in harmony.
Andrea Gusty grew up on the Kuskokwim in Aniak. Now she's the vice president of corporate affairs for the Kuskokwim Corporation. The Native corporation owns the surface rights to the proposed mine site and has built a strong partnership with Donlin Gold. The Kuskokwim Corporation, or TKC, calls Donlin's plans environmentally and socially responsible.
Not only does TKC trust their ability to do it right, we will make sure it is done right, because Donlin has worked with TKC and our shareholders every step of the way.
Gusty says she has confidence in the 3-step water cleaning process outlined in one permit. It requires the mine's wastewater to meet state standards for drinking water or aquatic life water. Donlin has also worked closely with Calista Corporation, the regional Native corporation that owns the subsurface rights to the mine. Calista is also in full support of Donlin. Donna Bach is Calista's government affairs liaison and grew up in Bethel. She championed the potential economic boost the mine could bring.
The Donlin Gold prospect will provide opportunity for jobs, and I think there's a lot of pride and fulfillment, not just in the environmental responsible way in which it's being handled, but also to bring pride back to a region that needs jobs.
Trade groups echoed the benefits of more employment for a region with few jobs and no industrial base. During the mine's exploration phase, 90% of its camp workers were Alaska Native Corporation shareholders or descendants.
Donlin remains a poster child in our industry of what you can do to ensure that communities benefit from an operation in their region.
Executive Director of the Alaska Miners Association, Deantha Crockett, says not only would Donlin boost the economy of the Kuskokwim region, it would grow the economy of the entire state at a time when revenue from its main natural resource, oil, is declining. Public comments on Donlin Gold's waste and wastewater draft permits will be accepted through February 13th. In Bethel, I'm Anna Rose MacArthur.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, how Southeast citizens are cutting costs on rising energy bills.
We call them energy leaders, but I think privately, I think of them as an energy champion.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Did you know while exposed to secondhand smoke, every breath you take can damage your heart? Cells lining blood vessels become swollen and inflamed. Plaque builds narrowing blood vessels, and clots can form, robbing the heart of oxygen. Exposure to secondhand smoke increases your heart disease risk by up to 30%. It's your heart, protect it. This message sponsored by Alaska's Tobacco Quitline, 1-800-QUIT-NOW.
Andeavor has acquired the Kenai Liquefied Natural Gas Facility from ConocoPhillips. The company, formerly known as Tesoro, announced Thursday the LNG facility will be a natural extension of its Alaska operations. Kenai radio station KSRM reports ConocoPhillips in November 2016 announced it would sell the Kenai LNG plant. The company in July said it was scaling back operations until it found a buyer. Andeavor says the LNG facility will strengthen its integrated value chain by providing low-cost fuel for its petroleum refinery. Andeavor says it will work to integrate current employees and operations into the Kenai refinery facility. The LNG plant includes a dock and loading facility. It was the only export of domestic liquefied natural gas in North America for nearly 50 years. In diesel-powered villages, electric bills can climb to several hundred dollars each month, especially in winter. So a batch of new energy assessors who live in those communities are being trained to spot areas of improvement around the home. From Alaska's Energy Desk, Elizabeth Jenkins has the story.
Alexis Wagner is looking down at a shiny black Samsung tablet. On it, there's a list she'll spend the next 2 hours filling out.
When we go through the house, there'll be appliance inventory, other plug-ins, windows.
Before we take off our shoes to enter this Juno home, Wagner inputs the occupancy. There's a woman who lives here with her two small dogs. Even body heat is taken into consideration when evaluating energy efficiency. Wagner says, just scrolling through this list, she's getting her own ideas.
I have to make a lot of changes to my own house.
Wagner works at the Metlakatla Indian community as a grant writer. But after today, she'll be able to do another task. And she's not alone. Five people are in the group with her, learning this new skill.
We call them energy leaders, but I think privately, I think of them as an energy champion.
Shayna Kilcoyne is an education outreach director at REAP, the Renewable Energy Alaska Project. The nonprofit invited residents from Cake, Angoon, Hoona, Yakutat, and Metlakatla to participate in the new program. It's part of a joint effort with Southeast tribes to make household energy assessments more accessible and affordable. An energy audit from a private company can cost thousands of dollars. So while these energy assessments aren't quite as detailed, Kilcoyne says for $25, it's a great value.
Some of the upgrades can be expensive. We're starting with the really low-hanging fruit.
In the home's kitchen, Austin Pajak, who lives in Yakutat, is eyeballing the lights. A gold retro-looking fixture hangs above the kitchen table. Pajak inputs the wattage of each bulb into the spreadsheet on his tablet, and Kilcoyne walks him through it.
And if we replace those with 9-watt LEDs, 28 hours per week, be annual savings of about $45.
At 12 cents, yeah.
That's $45 a year the homeowner could save just from swapping out these lights. But Kilcoyne says not every energy vampire is so obvious. Take your coffee maker, for example. Some models have a burner plate, which keeps a pot of coffee warm all day and uses electricity.
So I make my coffee and then I pour it into an insulated pot that I got at the Value Village.
Addressing the little things doesn't solve the bigger problem, though, that these communities are powered by diesel. But Jennifer Hanlon, an environmental director at Yakutat Tlingit Tribe, says those small household fixes are the best option for now. She says Yakutat is still a ways from tapping into alternative forms of energy, like tidal.
You know, we're not going to get that up and running anytime soon.
So having a few trained people in Yakutat who can offer energy assessments could at least ease some of the financial burden, and Hanlon says make it easier for people to stay in Yakutat. After a few hours of scanning the Juneau house from top to bottom, the energy assessors are ready to make their final recommendations and explain to the homeowner how much they could save.
Yeah, someone has to drum for us, right?
Annual saving cost.
With a few simple adjustments, the household electric bill could be reduced by close to 10%. One of the new energy assessors told me they were excited to go back to the village and share what they learned. They already had a list of homes lined up. From Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Elizabeth Jenkins in Juneau.
The Defense Department has awarded a $6.5 billion contract to the Boeing Company to oversee another expansion of the missile defense base at Fort Greely. According to Reuters, the Pentagon announced the contract will accelerate the delivery of a new missile field with 20 additional silos and two additional silos in a previously constructed field. The contract runs through December 2023. Boeing officials say the company met its commitment to an earlier expansion at Greely. The total number of ground-based interceptor missiles is now 44. The 35th Yukon Quest International Sled Dog Race starts tomorrow morning in downtown Fairbanks. The annual pre-race banquet was held last night, and the start order was determined for the 26 mushers running the 1,000-mile race to Whitehorse, Yukon. The first musher goes out at 11 a.m. behind the Morris Thompson Center to head up the Chena River. And as KUAC's Zoe Rome reports, emotions are mixed as Quest rookies and veterans look forward to the challenge of the world's toughest sled dog race.
Nervous excitement and anticipation are tangible as mushers and their dogs await the start of this year's Yukon Quest in Fairbanks. The sound of idling trucks and barking dogs are ubiquitous as handlers stretch their furry teammates, tails wagging with nervous energy. While there are many unknown factors facing this year's Quest competitors, such as unpredictable weather and trail conditions, early reports from Alaskan trail breakers have been encouraging. This year's start should see good ice and cool, clear conditions. And now, mushers know their starting order. Each year, teams draw bib numbers that assign them an order. Strategy, along with attitudes, varies.
Well, I'm not happy.
Quest veteran Luke Twiddell, who drew the 26th and final bib number, shifts his strategy.
Yeah, it's not the best, but hey, I'll go with that.
Well, I just drew bib number one.
The front of the pack will be led by rookie Tim Pappas, who hopes to take advantage of extra time on the trail.
I'm excited to be out on the trail first because that's what I like. That's where I like to be. It means I'm going to have the longest start differential, so I'll be able to get a little bit more rest than some of the other teams.
The other 24 mushers will be somewhere in between.
Number two. I think it's the most perfect number you can pick, so...
Veteran Tarsten Konar is happy with his draw and says that over the course of such a long race, a lot can happen.
No one wants to go out first, but the sooner you go out, the better it is. It's a 1,000-mile race, so it doesn't mean so much if you're going out half an hour earlier or later.
After months of training and preparation, mushers and their teams are ready to hit the trail. With long nights of snowy solitude under the stars, they're ready to go.
You just want to get a show on the road. It's just nice to get to hit a trail line.
In Fairbanks, I'm Zoe Rome.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Alaska Pipeline Service Company, sustaining Alaska's pipeline for 40 years and counting.
Opioids are common prescription pain relievers and must be used properly to avoid danger. Common opioids include hydrocodone, oxycodone, morphine, fentanyl, and codeine. Safely getting rid of unused opioid medication prevents children and pets from accidental poisoning and protects the environment. Information about safe opioid storage and proper disposal is at opioids.alaska.gov. This message is sponsored by the State of Alaska Department of Health and Social Services.
Find out how you can include a gift to your public radio station through estate planning. Ask your financial advisor or contact your public radio station to learn more.
Ketchikan,
Kotzebue,
Dillingham,
Sitka,
Chugiak,
Fairbanks,
Fort Yukon,
Wrangell,
Barrow,
Unalaska, Dutch Harbor,
Alaknarechamute.
This is AK on Alaska News Nightly. I'm Dave Waldron. This week on AK, one devastating medical bill. Each year, thousands of Alaskans are on the brink of homelessness because of lost jobs, illnesses, or accidents. This month, Alaska Public Media's Solutions Desk is following the story of one of them, Dion Nguyen. Anne Hillman has more.
Dion Nguyen drives slowly through Anchorage, heading to yet another appointment.
How often have you met with him?
This will be my third time going over there.
Dion's phone rings constantly. First it's the nurse, then the pharmacy. He juggles appointments with medical providers and social service agencies. Dion's life used to be filled with very different types of appointments.
Barbecues, birthday parties, several birthday parties, so many kids. Yeah, so birthday party almost every month of the year, almost.
Dion and his wife raised three biological children and dozens of foster kids. They ran a therapeutic foster home for 8 years. He says at one point, they had 10 young people in their house. For most of his life, he's provided in-home care for people with disabilities.
I believe that's what God put me on this earth for, to take care of people. So I took care of elderly and took care of middle-aged people and took care of kids.
Dion left the state for a couple of years for health reasons, but returned in the spring of 2017 to continue working as an at-home healthcare provider. In early October, he rented a large furnished home in Anchorage for himself and his daughter so he could start pursuing his foster care license again. That's when the trouble began. As we drive across town to another appointment, he explains his doctor asked him to soak his foot because of a sore on the bottom. So he did. Then, a few days later...
You know, my leg stopped working. I passed out on the job twice. Didn't know what was going on. Went to the doctor. He thought it was due to my diabetes, but it wasn't.
In mid-October, the day before he was due to move into his new home, he went to a hospital because of a serious infection in his foot and leg. And he stayed there for a month and a half. Doctors had to amputate his big toe.
And then when I got out of the hospital, I thought I was going to be able to go back to work. And wasn't able to go back to work. So that would put me in this situation.
Dion can't pay his rent. He burned through savings while in the hospital. His long-term disability check from his diabetes isn't enough. And he's caring for his teenage daughter. And for Dion, it's not just his housing that's at stake. It's the additional income from his dream job of running a therapeutic home. Dion isn't alone. Health and safety-related incidents, like illnesses, deaths in the family, and car accidents, cause about a quarter of the cases of homelessness in Alaska. He's doing what he can to avoid joining that statistic, but he won't be able to go back to work until he can easily walk again in a few weeks or months. For now, he's enlisted the help of his nephew, Latrell Nguyen. Latrell runs errands for him and makes sure he doesn't fall when he does try to get around with his walker.
I've been being his, like, I'm my his uncle's assistant. Feet.
Yeah.
You know, basically. Yeah. I'm doing all the moves. All the moving for him.
For Latrell, the experience is strange. He's used to seeing his uncle living in nice homes and caring for others. Usually, Dion is the one looking out for him.
This is the first time he hasn't been independent, you know what I mean? He's normally doing things on his own, or it's him and his wife, you know? So it's a whole nother ball game, a little bit harder.
The situation frustrates Dion too. He says he's doing everything his physical therapist and nurse tell him to do, but healing and asking for help take time.
I just want to get back to work. I really want to get back to work so I can pay my own way. Mm-hmm. That's really what I want to do.
You can follow Dion's story and learn about the resources he finds through the Solutions Desk at alaskapublic.org/solutions. For AK, I'm Ann Hillman.
Now it's time for 49 Voices. This week we're hearing from Carolina Vidal in Anchorage. Vidal is originally from Mexico and is the owner of the Piñata Shop in Anchorage.
First, I started calling myself a word I made up, piñateur, which is silly because it's got some Spanish and French, but no, I'm just, I guess, the owner of the piñata shop. Almost a year ago, my now 7-year-old was about to turn 7, and she asked me for a trolls theme birthday party, And she also have to twist my arm to make a party. I enjoy parties a lot. I was an event and wedding planner in Mexico, and I worked doing the same in New Jersey. I knew I wasn't going to find it in Anchorage because I knew what I've seen piñatas before, and I think I know piñatas. I have had them all my life, and usually by the time the second kid hits it, it's broken in pieces, and they thought it was very fragile and not very well made. So I told her, I'm going to make you a piñata, and she went for Cloud Guy. She wanted the cloud to rain candy once it was broken. And I gave it a shot, and I loved how it turned. And that was the beginning of it. I want to do something different, so I went for a salmon, a humpy salmon. And I loved how it turned out. And my husband, the Alaskan guy, was very proud. He took a picture of me holding the salmon piñata and sent it to all his relatives and all our neighbors and friends, started looking at what I was doing, and I started getting orders from them. I've seen many of them being whacked, and people ask me, like, you know, doesn't it hurt to see your work and, you know, those hours you invested in them just being whacked? And I was like, no, I thought it was going to be like that, but once I'm there, I'm like, I'm excited for the kids, and I'm like, get it, and, you know, harder, and come on, Johnny, come on, Lulu, come on, go for it. That's nice for me to make in their very first piñata, and then I have people coming back to me and asking for more.
Carolina Vidal lives in Anchorage. 49 Voices is AK's attempt to put every Alaskan on the radio. Thanks for listening to AK this week. We had help from Ann Hillman, Wesley Early, and Victoria Peterson. Tune in next week for more unique stories from around the state. I'm Dave Waldron.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. You can find us on Facebook at Alaska Public Media and follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Teresa Katsarilis and Anna Rose MacArthur in Bethel, Liz Ruskin in Washington, D.C., Tim Ellis and Zoe Rome in Fairbanks, and Elizabeth Jenkins in Juneau. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron, Wesley Early is our web editor, and I'm Lori Townsend. Have a great weekend.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by ConocoPhillips, investing in oil and gas production and creating economic opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company.
ACPE's education loan refinance can save you money and give you just one bill for all your private, state, and federal loans. The Alaska Refinance Loan offers Alaska residents a 4.95% interest rate with no fees. You choose between a 5, 10, or 15-year plan. Go to acpe.alaska.gov/radio or call 1-800-441-2962. This message sponsored by Alaska Commission on Post-Secondary Education.
One of the greatest honors for a public media station is delivering on its promise to provide quality programming and news you can trust to the communities it serves. What you hear on air is the result of a dedicated team working together to bring you the best. It's a privilege to be a part of your day. Thank you for listening, for your feedback, and for your support. This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media.